Hey everyone, and welcome to Cut to the Chase with Emma and Camila, a series of the Social Sport podcast on the Sidious Mag podcast network. Wow, that is a mouthful, but a very exciting mouthful. Each month on Cut to the Chase, my co-host Camila Jornet and myself, Emma Zimmerman, will give you a no-filter conversation around the intersection of endurance sports and social change. Seriously, no bows, no frills, just honest and important conversations. Cut to the Chase will come out once a month right here on the Social Sport podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to Social Sport wherever you get your podcasts so that you can join us each month and cut to the chase. For this episode of Cut to the Chase, Camila and I talk about people-centered environmentalism and how it relates to athletes. You might think of this as intersectional environmentalism, environmental justice, people and planet, whatever terms you use, taking a people-centered approach to environmentalism is near and dear to Camila and my hearts. In this episode, we cover so much. We talk about what people-centered environmentalism means to Camila and myself. We mentioned some running and outdoor brands doing important work in this space, what it looks like in different communities, and we even talk about our favorite childhood memories of the great outdoors. I loved this conversation because it's something we are both so passionate about. Welcome to the second ever episode of Cut to the Chase with Emma and Camila. Camila, how are you really today?
Today, I'll be honest, I'm pretty tired. I had, 4 days last week where I was up at 4 a.m. and didn't get to sleep until really late, working on some stuff for Tracksmith. So busy last week, but yeah, I'm excited. We're halfway through the week now and making it through. How are you feeling? How are you really?
Are they exciting things for Tracksmith?
Yes.
Anything
exciting
you can share
things? Just some new items coming out, new colors coming out, getting ready for summer. Summer running is always something I look forward to. So I'm pretty excited about those things. But yeah, stay tuned for that. How are you doing?
Nice. I'm doing pretty well. I mean, very super busy, kind of like you, a little bit all over the place. This is last week of my semester of grad school. So that's been busy. Nice. And I go to NYU. NYU, we're actually on strike, graduate student workers. So I've been on the picket line a lot this week. We're striking for fairer wages and better healthcare and a better relationship with the police for, you know, graduate student workers. So that's been busy along with finishing up the semester. So yeah, but otherwise I'm excited to be here with you today. And we're talking about people-centered environmentalism, which I think has so many different aspects of it. So do you want to kind of give us an overview, Camila, of what that means to you?
Yeah, I'll try and sum it up. I feel like it's one of those things that really has so many different connections to my life that I'm always kind of all over the place when it comes to the environmental movement. But I think really what we're starting to realize more and more, especially I think through social media platforms and sharing and things of that, is that the environmental movement has to be intersectional. I think Leah Thomas does a great job of talking about that on her platform, Intersectional Environmentalist, which, full disclosure, I sit on the council there to discuss some of these issues and how they tie into different pieces of our life. But really, you can't look at the environmental movement and saving the planet without looking at the people that live on the planet and how they're also affected by this whole movement and climate change. And it's just, it can be overwhelming at times. I find myself often feeling like, ooh, can I really speak on that? Or, oh, I don't know the right way to phrase this, or I'm still learning this piece of it, but I'm really passionate about this piece of it. So there's definitely a lot there. I'm curious, Emma, like, when did you feel that you started to realize that this movement was intersectional or needed to be more intersectional, I guess I could say?
Yeah, I don't know if there's an exact moment, but I can definitely recognize like a growing cognizance for that. And, you know, I think about when I was a kid, I was always kind of like an environmentalist without a cause, a super surface level, you know, privileged environmentalism that only a kid, maybe not only a kid, but that a kid would have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I started to realize more and more the intersectional nature as I got older, probably in high school. I don't think I fully unpacked it until college. And I mean, I studied political science and environmental science in college. So kind of a lot of the research I was doing, a lot of the work I was doing as an undergrad was in intersectional environmentalism, not always using those terms, but really looking at how environmental rights connects to gender and connects to race. And then in typical me fashion, of course, as soon as I start thinking about anything, I'm obsessed with it. So I think from college mm-hmm. on, I became obsessed with the intersections between environmentalism and race and gender and socioeconomic status and everything. There's so many intersecting variables.
Definitely. Yeah.
How about you? You posed that question to me, but I want to know if there was like a moment or a time period for you.
I feel like for me, my environmental journey has been something like I kind of carried in my pocket with me from a young age, but not something that I shared outwardly for a long time. Not that I was like hiding it. I guess you could say probably my first instance of like environmentalism was probably when I was in Girl Scouts and we would go camping and you learn like leave no trace. And that was something that always stuck with me there. And then as a runner, I was out running on trails a lot of the time. And so I started to be more aware of my environment. And then that started getting me thinking like, well, what are other high schoolers that are running? What's their environment? If they're running on streets and it's more smog in the city, like their experience must be really different than my experience. But I had a lot of these little tidbits that kind of stuck with me. But I would say I wasn't doing a ton. You know, it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, I care about the planet. Yeah, I believe in climate change. Yes, I'd like to do something. And I couldn't figure out where to start. So for me, one of the things I did, which in hindsight isn't a huge thing, but I stopped buying single-use plastic a couple of years ago as much as I could in groceries and snacks and all of that. And I felt like once I started doing that, it led to a lot of conversations with people of like, oh, why are you doing that? And what's the impact of that? And, oh, well, if we're going to go have happy hour at Camila's, we better not bring any plastic. Mm-hmm. It kind of like lit a light bulb in my friends' heads. And what I realized was my impact wasn't so much one person buying less plastic. It was the fact that I had a voice within my network. And for me, that's the most interesting part of this movement is seeing how this ripple effect can happen across different platforms. And I feel like more and more, we're starting to see people speak up outside of just Earth Day, which I know last time we talked about those social media holidays. And in the past, it was very much, well, it's Earth Day, let's do a trail cleanup. But now we're seeing a bit more of that. And I think as more people start connecting in that way, we will be able to lead to more people-centered environmental work as well. I'm curious, you talked a little bit about your background in terms of how you ended up in this like people-centered environmental work, but what was the driving force for you to like dig deeper past this kind of surface level environmentalism?
Okay, I'm putting a note down that I'm going to get back to that, but I have a follow-up question for you because I'm really interested in something you said and I don't want to lose that thread. You talked about that ripple effect, and this is maybe a selfish question I'm wondering for myself because I often find, you know, I will come across maybe too strong in my environmentalism or other people. I think specifically my family, maybe less so my friends because they're similar to me, will be almost offended sometimes by my environmentalism. And I guess, how have you navigated that? How have you navigated not seeming like you're forcing other people to do things or to take on practices?
Yeah, I definitely navigate that a lot. I try, as corny as it sounds, to like lead by action. Like the only actions I can really control are my own. And I'm not judgmental of people that buy plastic. I think that was something I had to like repeat over and over and over. I kind of felt like probably the same way my vegan friends feel when they're like, it's okay that you ordered chicken. I'm just not eating chicken. Like that was what I had to do with things I was doing for the environment. But I think as long as you're living in what you believe in, the people around you are going to have some sort of interest. I like to think that as long as you're not shoving it down other people's throats of like, don't you dare bring that in my house. But instead, like sometimes I was happy when my friends brought cheese because I had to basically stop buying cheese. So I was like, thank you for bringing something wrapped in plastic that I miss eating. But yeah, it is tricky to walk that line. And something I'm figuring out every day. So
it's so funny, you know, the veganism thing. So I'm a vegetarian. I have been for a long time. And I often feel like I go the other direction by trying to show people that I'm not judgmental. You know, like if I'm at a restaurant with a friend and they're like, oh, I could order the burger or I could order, you know, something else. And I feel like I have to be like, get the burger, like do it, you know, but yeah, it's almost a little ridiculous. But anyway, going back to your other question about, I think it was kind of the driving force for me to get into intersectional or people-centered environmental work. And, you know, I mentioned when I was in college and this kind of all came pouring into my brain, the intersections that exist with environmentalism, I became really interested in this theory, which I think is interesting, called feminist political ecology. And I'm going to go into super nerd mode, but it's pretty much like an academic theory that looks at gender as a crucial variable in relation to class and race in constituting access to and control over natural resources. And for me, I became, you know, by using that theory, I became super interested in specifically women's agricultural cooperatives in different countries and how their gender intersecting with race and class and place affected their access to environmental resources, specifically as it relates to farming. And so that was, you know, like my part of my senior thesis in college. And after college, I actually was working and doing research in that area for a little while. So I guess like that was really the agriculture and feminist political ecology was kind of my launching point. Although now I recognize that I think kind of centering gender is a little bit limiting, as much as you're looking at gender as it relates to race and class. I think that by saying like gender is the thing, gender is the factor we need to center, that can be limiting. But yeah, that was a long-winded way of saying kind of, you know, the intersecting pieces of women in agriculture were really what launched me into this work.
Yeah, definitely. And I think too, as much as we pivot from centering one aspect too much, that's kind of where it's beneficial. Like for me, I really appreciate when I can speak with someone who's centering another piece of this movement, because then I'm like, oh, I can learn from you and you can learn a little bit from me, and then we can be stronger together. Then we can both speak on something moving forward. And I think as long as we're all open to those different perspectives and being okay to say, wow, I hadn't thought of it from that perspective, but I'm going to take that with me, then that's how we really can keep moving forward for sure.
Totally. I love that. Learning from other people's, you know, what other people are focusing on. And Camille, you have worked in the outdoor and running industries for quite a number of years now. I'm wondering how you have seen environmentalism in general represented in these industries, but also whether these industries have taken a people-centered approach to their environmentalism.
I would say I've definitely seen an upswing recently. Like clearly, again, the last year and a half now, it seems like people are really like saying things with their whole heart a bit more than they used to. But I would say a few years ago, it definitely seemed more like brands were comfortable supporting people associated with the brand who might have had a mission, but they weren't necessarily taking the stand themselves as a brand. So perhaps they had a sponsored athlete, ambassador, influencer who cared about something. They would say, this is a great partner to speak on Earth Day. You know, we'll let them do a takeover and they can say what they want to say about the environment. And clearly they're on our platform. But like there seemed to be this missing link in a way. And so that was always interesting for me to realize that a lot of times I felt like these initiatives were being done by influencers in this space or athletes who had a connection than by the brands themselves. And I would say recently I've noticed a lot more from the brand side of them being okay finding the right avenue to stand up for something. And that's really exciting because I think the more brands that do that, like you can't just lean on these huge powerhouses that have always been the brands that speak out. You have to have like consistency across different areas. It doesn't always need to be outdoor brands. It doesn't always need to be athletic brands. But if everyone can have that voice, then again, we can hit that intersectionality and see it happening in different areas. So I think for me, it's interesting, clearly from a marketing perspective, brands are open to sharing these stories. I think we need to just get to a point where we're open to building these relationships as well. So it's not just that one-off event where you throw a bit of money their way and let them take it. Like, how can we do this together? I think is a big step forward.
It's so interesting where you're saying about like individual people taking on these conversations or kind of, you know, the brand maybe sponsoring or supporting people maybe more so in previous years. Mm-hmm. And that is so true, but it's not something I've really thought about much in the past. But now that you say it, I'm really thinking back on the marketing I've seen brands do around people-centered environmentalism and how it has really been maybe their ambassadors or their sponsored athletes who've taken it on, not the brand itself.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, sometimes a piece of me is like, yeah, well, that's great that that person, like brands, in my opinion, should use their platforms to elevate other voices. Mm-hmm. That's how I approach my marketing. And that's what I think will really just make the world better. But it is interesting to try and navigate, like, what does that look like on the inside and who is really benefiting? Is it the company that now looks like they're doing the right thing? Or is it the influencer who needs to pay their bills? Or is it the movement that we're trying to really like move things forward with? And I think that's one of the trickiest pieces to nail, because as a business, you need to make money at the end of the day. We live in a capitalist society right now. So like, that is what it is. So they don't want to tank their business over a stance. There's influencers who have become an entire job in itself. It's no longer like a side thing for so many of these people. And then there's this common place in the middle, which is the environmental movement, which we're trying to push forward at like light speed, it feels like, most of the time, because everything we hear is that the world is going to crumble. And then you add in all the intersectionality on top of that, and all of a sudden it's like, where do I even start? Like, how do I navigate this? And that's where sometimes you really just have to take a step back and be like, it's okay that I'm focused on gender. It's okay that I'm focused on race. Like, because it's so much. It's exhausting.
Exhausting is a great way to sum it up. Totally. Yeah. I feel like we often come to this point in our conversations, Camila, where you're just like, oh, it's so much. What do we do?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, from your standpoint as both an activist and a runner, are there some brands or even maybe influencers that you see that appear to be like really committed to moving this forward outside of like these one-off sponsored posts?
Yes, a few brands do come to mind. I mean, I have to shout out to Ope Running. They're actually a sponsor of the show, but their founders, Savannah and Dallas, are going to be on the podcast. They're a pretty new running apparel brand that is focused on sustainability. They use only recycled and dead stock materials, and they're focused on ethical and fair working conditions. So it's really kind of that conversation of the true cost of apparel, which affects the environment and also affects the most marginalized people who are often working in factories or around factories. So that's Ope. They're doing great work. There's also Jonji, which is a Boston-based company. They're focused on expanding access to safe drinking water. I know they also work with people and artists in the countries where these safe drinking water projects are housed. So that brings in more of that intersectional piece to it. Pioneers is a new running streetwear brand by Sid Batista, who is on the podcast. It's focused around communities of color, and I think he uses recycled materials as well. I'm trying to think if there are other ones big ones I'm missing. Wazelle has done a lot with intersectionality. I'm not quite sure if they've done much with intersectional environmentalism or people-centered environmentalism. Let me know if I'm wrong, but I know that intersectionality in general is a big thing they focus on. Am I missing any big ones?
I'm trying to think. I want to say like Cotopaxi also does a really good job at being more people focused. They're definitely like in their brand DNA is doing good. And I think they have a really interesting approach because they're not so much focused on always like screaming from the mountaintops, the enviro side, as much as they are like, these are the people behind something. And like, we're going to tell those stories and we're going to partner with all of these different organizations and give grants through their foundation. And I think that's one way that they really do give back. And that I think it's really cool that their focus is on people, because ultimately people are what is affecting the environment. So like the two go hand in hand. And I think that's something that you learn the deeper you get into this movement, that it's not just about like trail cleanups and beach cleanups, but it's about like, why is there trash on the trails? And what is the educational part of that so that we can stop that from continuing? And what is the infrastructure and who's coming to these trails? Like the trash is the symptom of a larger problem. Mm-hmm. And so now we're kind of at a point where we're working backwards to say, can we pinpoint a few major problems and can we invest in correcting those?
That's so important. And I guess I'm thinking, because I'm not in the marketing world in the way that you are, and I see a lot of disconnect. So companies either focus on environmentalism or they either focus on people and less of like what you're saying, we do this trash cleanup because of the people. And I guess I'm wondering whether you think it's in companies' interest to connect things in that way, or whether it's in companies' interest to, you know, kind of choose we're focusing on environment or we're focusing on people, or to be very transparent about the fact that the two go hand in hand.
I mean, in my perspective, I don't think you can focus on the environment without focusing on people. I think it's a really strange disconnect that has happened in the movement where we're prioritizing everything on the planet except people who live on the planet and are causing the damage. Like, I don't see how you can separate the two. I just really struggle with that. But clearly, like, I bring with me the knowledge that I have about people and how they're affected. And that's something that's been tied closely to my environmentalism my entire life, I guess. It's like you kind of have these lived experiences where you might not have even realized it was a environmental cool thing, like thrifting or buying clothes that are durable. I bought clothes, or I guess my mom bought me clothes that are durable because I was a tomboy when I was little. And so I didn't get the fast fashion limited two jeans. I got the heavy duty Levi's that she sewed cute fabric on the ends of. So they looked more like girls' jeans, but I could still play outside. That could be something where someone would say, wow, great. Like no more fast fashion, paper thin girl jeans, but we weren't doing it because it was like an environmentalist movement sort of thing. And I think if we take a step back and we look at how we move through this world, we all have little things that we are aware of that we are trying to do. And I think it's okay to congratulate ourselves for those, because if we're not proud of something that we're doing to help the movement, it gets really hard to keep pushing forward. So I don't know that I completely answered your question, but I feel like companies can't choose one or the other. Like they go together.
For sure. You absolutely answered it. It was a super loaded question. And I think I knew your answer going in, but of course I wanted to hear it in your words. There was this really awesome article recently in Trail Runner Mag by Zoe Rome, who is incredible. She's the editor at Trail Runner, and it was called A Trail Runner's Guide to Environmental Justice. I thought that had some really great suggestions for runners in particular, and I'm just going to quickly read two that stood out to me. One was educating yourself on the various issues that connect to environmental justice. So water quality, sanitation, indoor health, and then join groups focused on these issues, these specific issues. And then the other thing was pushing for improved tribal consultation and expanding co-management opportunities, because Indigenous-led conservation has been shown to improve land's biodiversity and carbon capturing ability. So I'll link that article in the show notes, but I think both of these suggestions point to being cognizant of where you live, your specific area, and how environmental issues interact with people in your area. So I would love to hear your thoughts on how runners can get involved in people-centered environmentalism in the places where they live.
Definitely. I think I'm a huge proponent of starting local for a lot of these movements. That's in no way to say it's not great to call senators and congressmen and try to shift things from that level. But I do think just in your own bubble, we all have a lot of influence, especially as runners. I think for me, one of the great things about being a runner is you get to explore where you live and you get to see different streets and avenues and neighborhoods that otherwise you might not be spending a lot of time in. And like Zoe was saying in this article, just educating yourself about what is going on in the places you live, your voice speaks a lot louder, whether it's at a, you know, a community meeting or city council. If you say, well, I live here and I've lived here for this long and this is something that matters to me, and you have friends that can say the same thing, and you can slowly build this group that's passionate about keeping an eye out and looking out for each other, like the same way you would look out for your neighbors, then it becomes a lot easier to push forward, but also to bring that like momentous energy, because it just feels better when you're doing it with people. And I think runners, a lot of us are social in that way. Like we like to at least go on runs with people. So if we can commit to something together for the long run, I think runners are, I'm biased clearly, but I think they're a great athlete to really focus on continuous social change in that way.
Yeah, those words, I live here, are so powerful, because we all love the personal. We love a personal story. You know, I think that's kind of the moral of everything. That's why personal stories are great marketing. You know, they're great. That's why novels and memoirs and, you know, all that sell.
Yeah.
And so I think focusing on how an environmental issue interacts with you personally and the people in your community is super important. And every community has different interactions with environmental issues. You know, the effect of climate change and other environmental issues in New York City is going to be different from where you live, Camila, and in California. So it's important. Totally.
Definitely. And I guess I kind of have a follow-up on that for you, Emma, because where I live, I'm literally 2 miles, if that, from mountains and trails, and I'm a mile from the ocean. So I definitely see two standard environmental landscapes of like beach cleanup or trail cleanup, like they're kind of right there. But I've noticed that in running, both on the track, on the road, and on the trails, that it seems like these conversations are easier to have with trail runners. Like there's more awareness in that space than maybe there is with roadrunners. For instance, if I'm on a trail run with my friends and someone sees an empty goo packet, oftentimes they will pick it up and stick it in one of their pockets and carry it out with them. But on the roads, especially like you're in New York City, you're not going to stop probably and pick up every piece of trash that you see on your running route, because that you wouldn't go running. You would just be picking up trash. So I'm curious, from your perspective of like more city living, what are some little things that runners might be able to do, or how do you form those connections in a larger metropolitan city?
Yeah, it's so difficult, but I think that it goes back to the last topic we were talking about. I think we do need to be cognizant of the different issues of environmental justice in urban communities, and specifically water quality, sanitation, access to the outdoors, and expanding those, maybe rather than thinking about something such as picking up trash on the trails. Mm-hmm. Because I think once we're cognizant of these, the ways that environmentalism can connect with this specific running community and this specific place, then we can get roadrunners more involved. Because I think you're right. I think there is less of a cognizance sometimes in urban communities. But I think you can also say that there's sometimes, this is a generalization, but more of a cognizance for justice in urban communities, depending on where you are. So I think that runners in urban communities would be interested in people-centered environmentalism. It's just making certain that the form of people-centered environmentalism interacts with the issues in that city.
Definitely.
In a good way. I think when environmentalism is talked about, it's often talked about as far away from urban communities, and that doesn't need to be the case.
Agreed.
I'd love to hear more about your experience as a board member for Runners for Public Lands, because they're doing such incredible work, and maybe what you've learned from their work about people-centered environmentalism, or what other runners could take away from their work. I'd love to hear that.
Definitely. I haven't been on the board for super long. I think it's been maybe about a month or so now, but Runners for Public Lands was an organization that piqued my interest when they started a couple years ago. They're based in Ventura, which is where I live, and really they're an inclusive running community that's dedicated to environmental justice, conservation, advocacy, and what that looks like to get a community of runners that are passionate about these things and moving the needle there. I think what's really neat for me is to see the diversity on the board, not just in terms of ethnic background, but also in terms of relationships to the outdoors. You know, it's not like everyone that's on there has run a 100-mile ultra race or ran in college or even runs all of their runs. There's hikers, there's walkers, there's marketers, there's people from all different types of job backgrounds that are all coming together. And in a way, I guess you could look at it parallel to how being intersectional in environmentalism can look when you get people that can be intersectional, if that makes sense. Like, it's not that all of us have been on boards before. I've never been on a board before. It's not that all of us have deep roots in environmental justice and activism, like in terms of starting our own organizations or leading this movement, but together we all bring different things to the table. And we all have a fire to create change. And I think that's what makes it really neat for me, is that we're constantly learning from each other and from each other's experiences. And so, yeah, I think one of the things that really stood out to me when I was considering joining the board was when Vic, our founder, said, basically, runners are probably the largest group of athletes out there when you look at like how many people run, even those that may not consider themselves a runner. Maybe they're a jogger, and that's okay. If you're out there running or jogging, there's so many of us, yet we're kind of the last to show up as a group to the environmental movement. Like, you look at POW and how they're like, oh, we have to protect our winners. And all these snow sport people are like, well, clearly climate change is happening and it's changing our winners. But with running, you can go out there for your 20, 30 minutes, an hour, and you're not always thinking about it in the same way, because we're not, it's not that we're not directly affected. It's just you can kind of put blinders on a bit easier. So for me, it's really exciting to be a part of an organization that is shedding a light on how we are affected and how we can mobilize to bring change.
Yeah, that sounds like such an enriching experience. And Vic is so cool. He was also on the podcast a while back and doing such important work.
Definitely. I guess bouncing off of what Vic has said in terms of runners being one of the last groups to this movement, what, if any, insight do you have on maybe why that may be? Like, why is it that we can be passionate about the environmental movement, we can spend a plethora of time outside, yet we're kind of okay just going about our day and being like, yeah, I mean, that's happening and I'll try and use my reusable lunchbox. But like, there's not that same drive I feel like the other sports have, and I'm kind of jealous of it in a way.
Totally. Yeah. And I don't have a great answer for this. I have a few theories. I don't know if I have the answer. I guess one thing I'm thinking about, because I've been involved in quite a bit of climate activism, is that mainstream climate activism is loud and it's bold. And I think sometimes runners are kind of nerdy, solitary people. And, you know, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe we don't see ourselves in the climate movement because it is marketed as this loud, bold thing. Mm-hmm. I like to think it's not because we're selfish. Maybe it's because the running community, at least in the US, is predominantly white and predominantly upper middle class, and maybe doesn't think so much about the effect of climate change, because it won't immediately affect the people who are most often runners in the US. Those are some theories I have. What do you think? Is there anything else?
I mean, I think that last point you made could definitely be a piece of it. And I think I've even fallen into this trap myself, just living in like a predominantly white area and doing a sport where I'm often the only Black woman, like on my college team or high school, there weren't a lot. Like, so I do find myself sometimes having to like snap myself out of it and be like, hey, wait. Just in terms of trail running, for one, if we go back to the fact that trail runners appear to be more vocal because they're spending more time out there, I think trail runners see their sport as very approachable and like anyone is welcome. And I've even felt like that when I'm out there, like everyone is welcome, but everyone doesn't feel welcome there. And so I would be curious, and I know this from my perspective, but I would be curious from like a larger perspective. If you're already in a sport where you feel like you're the only, are you also going to be the only that is also speaking out on these issues? Like, if I show up to a new group of runners, and I'll be honest, I'm not going to show up and be like, well, you guys, like, why aren't there more Black people out here? Why aren't, like, that's not going to be the first thing out of my mouth, but I'll definitely notice how many people of color are part of a run group when I show up, and that might affect how comfortable I feel in that space or how I portray myself or how much I code switch. So I think there's a piece of that in the environmental movement too. It is loud. You do kind of have to like get in people's faces and throw these statistics that are just alarming and discouraging at people. And if you're already not completely comfortable in a space, you're probably not going to be the person to not only mention the movement, but then tie in the fact that like, oh, and all of this comes with it. Now we have to think about people and gender and race and class as well. So I don't know. I'd be curious to see some sort of like survey go around as to how many runners really are participating actively in the environmental movement, you know?
Let's do it. We could do it. That sounds really important. And I kind of want to meditate on that fact you brought up that, you know, trail running has this vibe of everyone is welcome, which is so in contrast to the fact that a lot of people, particularly people of color, don't feel welcome in trail running or aren't made to feel welcome in trail running. So that's really important. And I think also intersects with the environment, of course, intersects with climate change.
For sure.
So much, like usual, so much to think about. But I guess we'll launch into some fun questions because we always want to end on a few fun questions. So I'll ask you, imagine you have a year with no work, no responsibilities. Your only task is to spend maximum amount of time outside. You have to choose one place to do that in. Where would you choose?
Oh, that's so hard because I feel like I haven't even gone enough places to have enough options of where I would choose. I don't know that I could pick like a country, but I can tell you what I would imagine in that place. I would like to spend a year on some sort of agricultural farm. I think that's something like I have my little garden boxes outside and my mom has a green thumb. But I'm really interested in food and transparency in food and sourcing and how recently I've been really bothered by the fact that I often don't know where what I'm eating comes from. And so I'd love to kind of be on the other side. I've been reading some books about like local food movements recently, and I've also been reading some books on the other side, like non-local food movement people that are like, globalization is great. And so the globalization is great people are essentially saying, well, you don't understand what happens on a farm and how much work goes into it and how ridiculous it is to try and do all of this at a local level. So for that reason, I would like to better understand what it looks like on that back end so that I can feel, I guess, maybe just more secure in my perspective of local eating being the way to go. So yeah, that's where I'd be, on the farm. I don't know where that farm is yet, but I think that'd be cool.
That's amazing. That's also my dream. I talked about the agriculture piece. I can always, if you ever want to go deep into agriculture and talking about sourcing and all of that, I am always game because aside from sports, that's my other obsession. So I'm so interested in this farm interest of yours. Have you ever woofed? Have you ever done? Do you know what that is? Worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's this organization called Worldwide Work on Organic Farms. And you basically can go for, it can be a few days. There's a website, you become a member, do a few days, you can do a week, you can do a month, I think you can even do a year. And basically you work half a day on a farm, you get half the day and weekends off to explore, and you're paid with room and board and food.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. You should look into it. I feel like you'd love it.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of want to ask you the same question because I'm curious your kind of dream. If you weren't working and you had all the time, where would you go?
I mean, what you said about being on a farm, it sounds amazing, but I think because I'm in New York now, I've been dreaming a lot about living in the mountains. I miss having easy access to trails, and I think that I would need to be somewhere for a year where I just have such easy access. I could run out my back door and be on trails somewhere like, I mean, Boulder, I think, comes to mind right away. It seems like the most obvious place, but there's a lot of other beautiful places like that, such as Vermont and in other countries too. But I think in general, that would have to be the requirement.
Nice. That sounds great. I'm very much looking forward to whenever travel seems most appropriate, and those trips just feel a little easier, you know?
For sure. Yeah. Soon. Very soon. Do you have a fun question for me, or are you skipping this week? It's okay if you don't.
I liked your question. I did have a fun question, but I feel like I enjoyed your question more, but I'll ask it anyway. My question was, what was your first memory of enjoying the great outdoors? I guess, like, is there a moment as a kid or whenever that really just kind of always stuck with you?
Oh, I hate that you don't love that question, because I love that question. Yeah, I'm super fortunate that I was always outside growing up. So I was born in New York, but I moved to rural Connecticut when I was 4. And I think even when I lived in New York, we were often going on little trips and day trips to do things outside. You know, my family would go on a hike or a long bike ride really every weekend. I'm trying to think of like a specific memory, but I think it might just be like my sister and I, when we, you know, we're in rural Connecticut, just kind of running around in the woods. I think I came at the tail end of the time when kids would just run around. I don't know if you experienced that. I mean, I think you're a year or two older than me. So yeah, I think my sister and I were always just running around the woods like wild children. And I think that is my favorite memory of just kind of that freedom of being outside.
Yeah.
How about you? Sure. I have to turn that back on you.
I think for me, it would probably be, even though this isn't like the great outdoors, but when it is outside. So I guess that really depends on what you think. But I had this great backyard when we moved into a different house when I was 5 in Redondo Beach. But it was a great backyard because it had a little bit of everything. Like, there was a small cement path that I could roller skate on. Then there was this huge tree. I'm curious how huge it actually was, because it seemed huge when you're little. But we had a tire swing on it. And I often used to skip the tire swing entirely and just climb into the tree with a book. And that to me was like my happy place as a kid. It was like, I knew I could go out there and there was nothing else to focus on but the words on a page and like a comfy nook in the arm of a tree. And that's a place that like just has my heart. Like, I don't remember the last time I climbed into a tree and read a book, but I just felt like there were no worries at all. Like, there is nothing consuming my brain except that. So that's probably like my earliest, really just like one with being outdoor memory.
Oh, that's such a beautiful memory. And I wish that for you. I hope that you are able to climb a tree and read a book again sometime soon. It sounds so amazing. Camila, this is always so incredible, always so reviving. Thank you so much for cutting to the chase with me.
Yeah, thanks for so much for chatting. Always fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Cut to the Chase with Emma and Camila on the Social Sport Podcast. If you resonated with this conversation, or maybe you want to know how you can get involved in people-centered environmental work, you can reach out on Instagram at socialsportpod. Something you can do to support the show is to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. That would be so helpful. Oh, and you can also share this episode with a friend if you enjoyed it. That is often the best way to spread the word about the show. Thank you for listening today. Stay sporty and keep resisting.